PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the Original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards. Joining me this week is Mr. Dean DiCrescenzo. You'll find his work on the Hackers Paradise homepage. He's a staff writer over there, and some of his ramblings over in the Hackers Paradise community. Dean, welcome back, buddy.
It's good to be back. And yes, there are a lot of ramblings, if you can find them.
Ramblings about the nicest way I can describe the way we interact on the forum at this point.
Yeah, I think it's pretty fair.
Just a 15-year staple of nonsense. Beautiful thing. How's the summer progressing, man? It's a little warm out today.
Yeah, you know what? It's been a little bit of a weird like summer. It's been nothing but rain. I think I saw a stat that in upstate New York it hasn't had a back-to-back dry day weekend since November.
Seriously?
Yeah, crazy, right?
I mean,
so everything's just wet. Yeah, I mean, I don't feel bad for myself either. I'm the fool that's like, all right, it's raining, let's go play golf, which sure. You saw up close and personal back in Hidden Creek in April. But yeah, now we got the heat wave and hopefully drying some things up just in time for some rain to move in again this weekend.
Yeah, the heat's crazy right now. I've kind of got a bit of free time this week with a little monster over at grandma's house, even though he plays with us if we do go out, but I asked the wife yesterday, I said, you want to go play golf tonight and play nine? Just get to, a little fun time. She's like, nope, sure don't. And I looked at the forecast and said, like, feels like 110. And listen, man, we talk all the time on THP about what's your cold threshold to play golf. I don't think I'd even consider over 100, especially feels like. It's just not my thing.
I'll be real. I'd rather play in colder elements. I'd rather play in the 40s than play in like the 90s, especially like the mid 90s when that heat index pushes up to triple digits. 45 or 95, I might be the guy that picks 45.
Yeah, I'll be right there with you. The nice thing about 45 is you can layer, and with apparel at this point, as good as it is, you don't have to get that bulky anymore to be warm.
Yeah, you can still swing, which is nice. I remember the only time I've ever played Bethpage Black was on a day like this. It was middle of August and the heat index was 109 and it was just an absolute miserable walk. Fun walk, because you're playing a great course, but yeah, it was kind of brutal.
That sounds horrible. Are there a lot of spots on Bethpage where even if the wind's up a little bit, it's kind of dead because you get under the tree lines or no?
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
So
yeah.
There's like a little heat locker on my golf course. It starts on the 12th green and goes through to pretty much the 15th fairway where it just runs along the trees. And if it's warm out at all, like gets hot, it is the absolute worst place to be. You just feel like you're baking. It's something different, man.
I'll skip that hole next time we're out there.
Yeah, I'll bet you will.
just write me down for a birdie. We'll move on.
Oh, nice. You're playing good then.
No, I'm just writing it out.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. That's, man, the one thing about the heat is there have been, and I didn't want to get into it this early, but we have to do it at this point. The tour guys are playing in the same climates we are. And there has been a longstanding tradition on tour that you must wear pants to play. I personally love it. I know you, at least you play like you like it on the forum, but there are a lot of people who absolutely hate it. And I will say this, as we talk about the apparel getting better, I know that pants are nowhere close to being the same today as they were, 20, 30 years ago, unless you're Jason Day trying to make a statement out there every week. But the idea that, that you can layer down a little bit, get the thinner pants on, let it breathe. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah, no, I'm like I said, I don't know if you wanted to jump into it that early, but I'm with you. I'm pro pants on tour. I know, James is going to yell at me and he's going to yell tradition. No, it's not about tradition. There's something about JD Talks mentioned it on the forum. There's something about the professionalism about it that makes it look like kind of like a uniform, but it's not a full uniform sport because Jason Day's wearing all sorts of garbage out there. So he doesn't comply. You know, I'm with you though. Pants make it look like more of a professional event.
Yeah, it's really challenging to defend the tour or state one thing when some of these fashion statements throughout the years have been so inappropriately stupid that you don't really have a leg to stand on. And I feel like there's a lot of things that the tour does where I'm very strongly in one way, but it's not for the tour. It's for my own perspective. And so I'll give you an example. The blade collar is a great one, or the turtleneck or the mock neck or whatever you want to call it. That does not belong in a golf course unless it's underneath a polo, in my opinion. I think there should be a collared shirt that exists out there. And I will say, we're talking tour, we're talking nicer golf courses, courses who'd like to have rules that are in place, a dress code. So I don't think it needs to be everywhere, certainly not like on an executive course or, you know, something like that. I think it's fine to be loose there, but, you know, some of these things that are on tour, I find so ridiculous. And the argument always goes back to that, right? Like, well, if they allow this, then why pants? I'm like, listen, that's not my choice. That's their stupid choice to let that happen.
Well, I mean, the blade collar, at least it has collar in the name. That kind of counts, right?
No, it does not count, Dean.
It's got blade collar. It's just a different kind of collar.
Here's what I wonder. If a guy who couldn't stop winning tournaments and majors hadn't been the one to bring that out, would we all look at it the same way?
Oh, God, no. He's the only guy that should be allowed to like wear the mock neck and even the blade collar if he wants. Everyone else, no.
Is there another piece of apparel that's been allowed to be worn on tour that bothers you the same way that maybe wearing shorts would, or something to that tune?
You know, joggers don't bother me as much because you see them more just in everyday, you know, travels. But you see somebody, I want to say it was Sam Ryder a couple years ago at Torrey Pines, had the joggers on. You know, he's got the no sock look, which the kids tell me is out these days. I don't know. So he's got the no sock look and the joggers. There's like an inch and a half or 2 inch of ankle showing. That was a little much. I'm not totally against it, but it was just like, whoa, like you say, personal preference.
I thought that was hilarious. Van Ruyen had stuff like that, I think, for a while too.
Yeah.
And I thought it looked funny because it just looked like he forgot what his pant length was or, you know, left him in the dryer too long or something like that. The ones that crack me up are the ones that bunch at the bottom. So it's like, it's got the real obvious stretchy point, and then like they are wearing ones that are too long for them. So like half the pant is all bunched up at the bottom. I don't know if they know that actually looks quite terrible, but
it gives you almost like an old school MC Hammer vibe.
Oh yeah.
Like you said, it's bunched a little bit down there and
yeah.
Just needing to like break out into a dance.
So the joggers thing is an interesting one because I support it. I wear them not to the same level. I think most of the pairs of joggers I have for golf are a little bit more understated. So they just kind of look like slim fit pants. But definitely none of them that like choke the ankle and not a lot that would show a ton of skin. Cause you know, I'm terrified of the sun, so can't really do anything with that. But, I think I still like it cause there's a, like, there are like pant adjacent. So let me ask you this. We're hopefully a long way from it, but if the guys start wearing capris on tour, what would you think of that?
Oh, yeah, no. Do you remember when Rafa Nadal started wearing capris playing tennis? And it was just like, whoa, what are you doing, man? Yeah. He was the only guy that was that of any significance that was at least doing it at the time. And it was so different. I don't think I could get behind it. I don't think I'd get behind capris on the PGA Tour.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just trying to think of like the trends that haven't quite hit. It looks like we're all going back to super baggy pants. I'm told that's popular now. I hope I never agree with that because I don't ever want to go back to the 90s and my designs of beige baggy pants is like the in thing. But I don't know, man. I think my reason for shorts are sort of twofold. Number one, it's the presentation I think matters a lot. And I think it's great for younger kids to see people be in that position and dressed nicely so that when they go to the golf course, they can feel good about it as well. But the other part of it is, and I know this is a real hot take, is the friggin' shorts you buy now are so friggin' short that, I mean, I don't want to see man thigh on Sunday. I don't want to see sweaty man thigh. It's just not what I'm looking for.
Are you sure? Because I mean, just think about it. Some guys, they're lining up their putt, they get down to that crouch. Dan, you'd be all over that.
Yeah.
Look at it.
Yeah, I definitely would not.
Check out Tommy Fleetwood staring down this final putt.
Like,
man,
the hairiest dude on Twitter rocking the 7-inch shorts. It's just like, come on, man. I don't want to see that. I don't know why people would, but you know, I think I could get around it, but they would have to, for my sanity, they would have to make a rule that there is a level that they can't go. I remember when my golf course had rules that applied that shorts had to be only so many inches away from the knee. And the joke of it is, when that was written, it was for women, not men, because that men actually wore shorts that fit them. And now it's like, I think there are more guys out there wearing shorts that would not fit that rule than women are. So it's been a really weird twist. But yeah, I think if they ever got to there, and don't get me wrong, I don't care about practice rounds at all. They can do whatever they want, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But if they ever get to that point, I really hope they limit the inseam or the length from the knee.
I remember there used to be this one guy in a golf league I played in. He's a really good golfer, but we always used to tease him that you could tell how important the match was that night based on how high his shorts were. So if he wore like really, really short shorts, they were in for a tough match. And I don't know if he used that to distract people or what it was, but that was always just the running joke. You could tell how important the match was based on his inseam length of that week.
Maybe that's how I win. Maybe that's how I win the club championship this year. I'll need like SPF 6000 for my thighs, but you know, I can't imagine my playing partners would have a lot of success with all that glare on the putting green.
You're going to have to reapply after every two swings.
That is disgusting. Man, you know what I love about you? You come on here and there's such great flow, but it's gross most of the time. We just end up somewhere.
Usually where the conversations go. They go nowhere near they were intended to be.
Yeah.
Well, and then, we're off the rails already.
I mean, I'm pretty okay with it. What did you think of Tommy Fleetwood last week? Are you as gutted for him as I am? Or are you like, hey, it's never going to happen at this point?
And I'm actually pretty gutted for him. I was rooting hard for him. I wanted to see him get it done. And, was live posting on the thread or on the forum while that was going on. And, you know, he gets to 18. He's still got the one shot lead. Hits a good drive. And then you see Keegan just mash one. And I'm thinking to myself, man, he would probably get this done if he wasn't playing against Keegan Bradley. First off, you know, Ryder Cup captain, New England guy. He's won there before. The crowd was 100% pro Keegan Bradley at that point. And I felt bad because I think if it was somebody else that was in that pairing and Tommy Fleetwood was about to get the win, they'd be pretty hard for him.
Yeah.
But you just going against Bradley, you just couldn't do that. I was gutted for him. Did you see the replay of that putt?
Which one?
Of Fleetwood's his par putt where it like nicks something and just creeps just a little bit off.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I didn't sit at my desk watching that putt saying he's going to miss and he's going to miss to the right. And then the putt will be made after him. Like here's my problem. And I feel horrible for Fleetwood because it's been so long. The guy's like 34. Can you believe that looking at him? He looks quite a bit older than that, but, it's been a long time. And I know when you're snake bit like that, it can be really challenging to fight the demons. I thought from a certain point on Saturday and pretty much every bit of the coverage I watched on Sunday, he looked like he was just hanging on. I think like five of the six putts down the stretch were woefully short of the hole with no real chance of going in. The one he did get past, I think it was like a convulsion because it went like further past the hole than the putt was, 17. Which he made made the which comeback. Made. My goodness, like what a putt! But you could just tell he was trying to hang on, and it's really challenging, I think, at that level to play like that. And I wonder if a guy like Keegan, who's been around the block, he knows what it's like, sat there and watched him like thinking, you know, what an opportunity. And it almost fueled him to get those last couple strokes.
Yeah. And, you know, Bradley's been that kind of like bulldog player his entire career. If you remember when he came out and he won the PGA Championship, I want to say he was four strokes down with like four or five holes to go against Duffner and ends up winning that event. You know, he's kind of had that reputation. Yes, his career, you know, hit rock bottom for a stretch there, but he's come back, and it really has just been his personality of being the fighter he is to make him come back, have that success, grab some wins, and now be the Ryder Cup captain. It's pretty impressive. So you could see him when Fleetwood was leaking oil a little bit, Bradley was like, okay, here's our chance. Let's go. And he was ready for it.
I'm not even going to say leaking oil. Fleetwood played the back nine like he was in a kiddie pool with water wings on, you know, waiting for something to happen. It was, and listen, dude, I know these guys are way better than I am. There's no doubt in my mind, but we watch it every week, so you become a little bit familiar with what it takes, right? And the type of play that these guys show down the stretch, you get a taste of the guys who are really defining those moments by the shots they're taking. And I'll add one more element to that and question to you. Bradley is no, he has been a victim of a twitch or a big moment, mm-hmm. Mental block, if you will, as you go. I feel like he's the kind of guy who is a much better dog chasing than a leader running from. You know what I mean?
No, I would definitely agree with that. I 100%. I think he's much better as the guy. Like I said, he's the dog that's chasing the car.
Yeah,
that's what he is, and he usually gets it. He's you know, not to use a term that I don't always agree with, but he's a ferocious competitor. That's what he seems like, right? Like he always wants to go out there and just like get it done and get the win. You could see he's very intense. All of his, you know, his victory this weekend, you see all the flashbacks of his career, and of course you see the one of him arguing with Miguel Angel Jimenez,
yes,
on the golf course. Yep. Like that's just who Keegan Bradley is, man.
Right.
He's ready to go. He's an intense guy, and he's got some twitches. He's a little nerve-wracking to watch his pre-shot routine, but yeah, when it's go time, he's ready.
He's a fun story to follow, and I'm curious in your perspective now, because he's showing a lot of interesting potential. Is he, after the snub and all that, is he going to start looking at, maybe I should be on the course for this Ryder Cup?
God, wouldn't it be something if he finishes like one spot outside of the automatic qualifier, and he's got to be a captain's pick, but he doesn't pick himself. He's like, oh man, I was close again, but the damn captain didn't pick me.
Yeah, I wouldn't pick me either.
It's going to be curious and interesting to see what he does, because he could still qualify. You know, there's still time left. He's obviously playing some really good golf right now. He could qualify for the team. I think he's said that he'll only be on the team if he qualifies. But now that he's already got a recent win under his belt, if he adds another one and still comes up just a little bit short, you have to think he's going to put himself on that team.
And not just that, you have to assume the guys around him are telling him to do that, which is pretty interesting. And not even as a sympathy thing, as like a, hey, you will make a difference, you should really consider it.
Do you remember when, because Tiger was the last playing captain for the President's Cup, do you remember when he announced himself as a pick?
I don't.
They were in the press conference. They said, Tiger, what made you decide, you know, to pick yourself? And he says, well, I talked to the captain, and the captain thought, yeah, that guy's playing pretty well. He put himself on the team. And I was like, man, that's fantastic. And he went out and he played well that week.
I would have preferred on Tiger Woods.
Yeah, Tiger Woods, damn it.
Fair enough. Yeah, so that's been a pretty fun buildup. I will say the tour has been pretty void of good storylines this year, outside of maybe like the Spawn story and now the Keegan Bradley story. Do you feel like these are the things that are going to get people to get emotional again about the PGA Tour?
I think it's hard. It's really hard to get emotional about the PGA Tour. JJ Spawn's win was fantastic. He played great golf the entire time through the US Open. I don't know how long that story has any kind of staying power, though. And I don't mean that as a shot at JJ Spawn, because he's shown this year that he is an incredibly capable golfer. He battled down the stretch at the Players Championship, obviously took home the US Open. It's just that he's still not a household name. So I don't know how long that carries, you know?
Well, I think the part that worked really well for me is that he had the heartbreak at Sawgrass. So, you know, to have that being as recent as it was, no one's talking about JJ Spahn at Sawgrass at the Players until he puts himself in a playoff, right? Like, then it's like, all right, who's this guy and why should I love him? And then you go to the US Open and suddenly, oh, that's JJ. We know him. We've seen him. What heartbreak. Let's root for him. You know, there was that piece of it that had he have not done what he did at Sawgrass, it would have been sort of a bummer finish to a US Open, but it's like, now you have something to root for. Whereas I feel like we've been sort of, but we also had Rory winning Augusta, which I guess I probably should have included that as a heck of a storyline, but I would say the bag's pretty mixed on whether people want Rory to win at this point on tour. So I don't know, man. I think the elements are there to create good narratives. Do you think that tour is executing on that?
It could springboard, just talking more about him a little bit, it could springboard him. Remember, that's kind of how we all got to know Kevin Kisner.
Yeah.
You know, he was battling down the stretch and lost at the Players' Championship. And then I want to say he was leading in the Open Championship. I think that was Carnoustie. I could be wrong on that one. But, you know, we got to know Kisner that way. Mm-hmm. And he's a name. People really like him. He's never been a prolific player on the tour. So that could be, you know, JJ Spahn obviously got the major, so he's a step ahead of that. It could propel him and could propel the tour a little bit. Do I think the tour will capitalize on that? No, I don't trust the tour. We've talked about it for a long time, how the tour does not do a good job of promoting guys and sticking with stories and making things, you know, compelling to reach the fringe golf fan, you know, the psychos like you and I were. Would
you call me
anything? Yeah, psycho. Yeah. You need me to say it louder.
Well, I want to circle on that because, you know, a lot of this discussion today is intended to be around the tour. And there was a moment on 18 when the camera was like all up in Fleetwood's face. And there's been a lot of conversation about these guys not enjoying having the camera there or not accepting or wanting the interview in the course of play. I've even seen images of players trying to like brush away the camera because it's too mm-hmm. close. And listen, it is relatively intimate to be that close. It is very, very aggressive to be that close. But I want to add an element that maybe these guys aren't thinking about. It felt like we were there with Tommy walking up. You know, there was an angle they had. It immediately sent me back to my last member tournament where we were in the shootout and all these carts are watching. And then this big emotional moment where you had to walk up and hit your ball while everyone's paying attention and that feelings you had, it just really, brought all those emotions up in me being in that angle. Now the mm-hmm. overhead didn't do it. At no point in the tournament was I thinking about that. It was until you got to that angle where you could really feel that. And I thought that was super interesting because what better way to showcase the moment these guys are in than to show, like, to be on the level they're on, looking at the things they're looking at. So there's like that side by side view where the guy's kind of walking around and then panning. I feel like that's incredibly good for golf.
Yeah, no, I think it is too. Cause like, you know, you're trying to put the guy that's on the couch in like at that spot in that moment. And like I mentioned with Keegan Bradley, with everyone shouting USA and being pro him, and you could see Tommy walking up to the green and the full crowd behind that amphitheater there. I mean, it was something, and you could feel it. You mentioned it. You could see the putt and you're like, yeah, he's going to miss this right. You could actually feel that happening if you were watching closely enough, as sad and heartbreaking as it is. I think they do a good job with that. I don't know how much of that is the tour itself or just the broadcast companies. I'm sure they've got to have some kind of conversations and partnership on what kind of access they could give.
Well, I think that's a pretty good example of where they could do better, because if they're not having that conversation, they should. How does our story get painted? What can we do to make it look more appealing or more exciting or more monumental? You know, you forget that these guys are fallible. You forget that they can miss shots, and then you see it and you're like, whatever, that guy sucks. But when you get to experience the moment with him, you're like, holy shit, this is actually a big deal. And it's not just that simple. You know, you watch a guy shoot a free throw and you think, how does he miss that? And you go outside, you miss five in a row. It's like, okay, it's not that easy. You know, it's just the ability to remember that is a pretty critical piece of the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me ask you another question, because we talk about how traditional golf has been and a lot of the sky fisters, if you will, on both sides of the argument get really trapped on things. I want to ask a question that I think is going to be incredibly polarizing. And I'm curious about your take.
Fantastic.
We've seen the match, for example. We've seen the 2v2s. One of the more entertaining parts of those is just how goofy the guys are in the cart together. Mm-hmm. You get the cameras set up there. It's in some cases really entertaining stuff. I'm curious to your thoughts on this. If the PGA Tour were to allow players to take carts rather than walk, with the additional element to it, where if you do take a cart, there's going to be a camera inside it. So you don't necessarily get directly impacted by it. But you can understand that if you're choosing to use that luxury, you're going to be available for a little bit of extra video content. What do you think?
I'd be okay with trying that for a tournament. And I bet you would see more guys opt for it as opposed to against it. I also think you'd see Tiger come back and win on the tour.
Wouldn't that be something?
Wouldn't that be something if he could take a cart? The problem with him is, and you've seen it in the matches, he's just not interesting when he's not hitting the golf ball. He doesn't want to play to the camera. So that's the kind of guy that I don't know if he would be like, yeah, put me in the cart. You know, you could record everything I do. I'm just not going to do anything.
Well, that's where I think it gets interesting, because, you know, when you're on the golf course, and I personally do this when I'm at my ball, when I'm reviewing my shot, I'm not interesting either. I'm trying to figure out how to do it.
I know,
but yeah, thank you. Yeah. You know that now that I made all those putts you didn't give me. Dick. But there's like that moment where you check out after that, especially when you're in the cart. In most cases, you can relax and have a conversation. The caddy is more than welcome to ride in the cart with them. And the idea is that they connect on something or talk through a shot. You just get those little bits. The idea that they can use that cart as an on-off switch rather than, you know, being at their ball and then walking, you're still very much in it. But once you get to that cart, it's like, okay, this is my off switch. I can coast for a little bit and then get back into it once I get out of my cart. It sort of allows them that on-off switch rather than being interrupted while they're on. You know what I mean?
I don't, because I'm just always on.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I played plenty of golf with you and there's no off switch. That's for sure.
There's no off switch. Still always on.
Yeah.
No, I get what you're saying. It's an interesting idea. It really is. It kind of makes it a little more like YouTube style golf.
Yeah.
Which for better or worse is becoming huge.
Right.
So, it's something that would be interesting to see. I think we've gotten more access to players now on the course than we have before. But yeah, I think with the right people, that could be highly entertaining.
Sure.
Also, it would be interesting to see some guys that you look at and you think they're nothing but intense out there, and then to see how they might relax in between shots. I'd be down for seeing that.
I have to think some of the guys will really embrace it, with the understanding that they're creating their own persona. It's not just about winning. It's more than that.
The other thing that would be maybe a struggle for some is going back and forth, you know, using that switch to go off and on throughout the round instead of having to just be in that moment the entire time.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how that would play out.
Those freaks can walk, or they can just keep their mouth shut in the cart. That's up to them.
Well, that's what I said Tiger would probably do, because we've seen it. We've seen all the different matches that have him in it. He likes to play like little jokes, but he's not a big, like, get in the car and like talk to like Charles Barkley or anything like that. He just like gets in the car and he's just like, where am I going?
Little inappropriate jokes. Yeah.
Yes.
Some of my favorite ones at Riviera a couple of years ago. Unreal. Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm just thinking about it. So let's circle back to less the video portion of it. Why do you think we still walk on the tour? Why do you think that's a thing?
Because they're athletes.
Yeah, they are.
You're athletes.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. I would be okay with a cart event.
Like, like waste management or something like that, where they're already pretty loose.
Yeah, I mean, give it a shot somewhere. He doesn't even need to be like an official event. You know, it could be like the Shark Shooter. It's not even called the Shark Shooter anymore. Is it the PNC Championship? It'd be something like that. Throw them all in carts. Do the same thing. Put a camera in there. Test the whole thing out. If you want to take the camera out, that's fine. But I mean, that's kind of a slap tickle event as it is anyway. So try stuff out there and have some fun with it and see if you can integrate it into some other tour stops, because we know there's events out there that are struggling to draw sponsors, viewership, you know, even players. So yeah, maybe you could push something in there and that might push the envelope a little bit to get people interested in it.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I'm for carts long before I'm for shorts on tour. There's no question in my mind. Especially what if the carts have air conditioning? Now they're just being lazy, you know?
I don't know which one I would be more in favor of, shorts or carts.
Really? It's a toss up. It is not a toss up for me at all.
Well, that's, you're anti-thigh, so I get it.
Very anti-thigh, yeah. Well, guy thigh, you know what I mean? Interesting. What a fun discussion with you, sir. I've got a few more of these. If you're
this one was not on the note card, was it?
It was not. Yeah. So when Dean comes on, I tell him about the things we might talk about. We never do. I think we've already landed on two of them. So I'm very excited about our progress on this one. But there's another piece that I want to talk about that was a hot topic lately, and that was when Scotty was asked about scoring on tour. And asking about sort of tricking out the golf course coming off the U.S. Open, talking about how was the course hard enough, because he won last year at the Travelers at like minus 22 or minus 24 or something like that.
Yeah.
And he shared a perspective that is really where I land on this. And I don't understand why people are so allergic to success on the golf course, especially at the tour level. The idea that minus 20 shouldn't win is kind of weird to me. It's like, you're not going to ask a guy not to kick a field goal from 60 yards because it's really far, you know? And when they do it, it's not like you give them, you know, less points because it's hard, or, you know, make him kick with his other foot the next time. There's none of that. So his example was, these guys making threes or dunking, you don't raise the rim in basketball.
Right.
I thought his point was really fair, is that golf in total is fairly allergic to success. And I don't really understand that. And I'd love your take on it.
Yeah. So I kind of took him as don't worry so much about what the score is. Just let us go out and play, and whatever it is, the best player that week is going to win. I'm kind of down with that. You know, the U.S. Open course, it was a traditional U.S. Open.
What was that? I'm kind of down with that.
I'm kind of down with that. I get it. So, but I'm to a point, though, where I don't, it makes me sound like I'm anti-fun. I don't want to see a tournament where guys go out there and they shoot, you know, 62, 62, 63, 61. Now, that's not happening. But if you get to that point, I'd be like, all right, that's just not as much fun to watch for me.
Okay,
I don't, but you know, last year's tournament at this course, you know, what is he, 22 under? That's fine. That doesn't bother me all that much. You know, a lot of guys are doing it. It's a course made for birdies. It's the week after U.S. Open where guys are usually getting their teeth kicked in. So it's kind of a nice contrast to what you just saw, and that's kind of what it was this week. There, you know, plenty of birdies were made. You know, the U.S. Open course I thought was set up fine. I don't think it was totally tricked out. You think it was totally tricked out? Like Marion, I think when they played Marion was really, I thought, tricked out for what it was. Oakmont's always just been a hard course, and there's just thick rough all over the place. I thought some of the fairway slopes might have been a little crazy, but I didn't think it was an unfair setup.
No, I mean, I don't sympathize for any of them that go out there and get frustrated at the U.S. Open. I think that's kind of the point of the U.S. Open, is to make it as obnoxious as possible prior to the event, and then hold on and see what happens. in this case, a lot of rain made it very strange.
Yeah.
So that there's a relatively good argument there that it maybe didn't play out the way they wanted it to, but it was a challenge nonetheless. I would say that the concern I would have for things like that, I think Sam Burns would probably agree with me, is kind of luck of the location, luck of the where the ball goes. Even a fairway lie is not necessarily the best thing. Lots of balls and divots. And, you know, if you do end up in the rough, who's to say your ball's sitting on top or laying dead down? And then once you're down there, how does it come out? So I think it's an unbelievable test. I don't think it's the perfect representation of skill. I think it certainly relies on luck a lot more to get through the week, but it's also 4 days of golf. So if you're playing well enough, you know, better to be lucky than good, better to be lucky and good. You know what I mean? So
the mental strain that those guys have to have.
Well, just ask Wyndham Clark, man.
My God, you. Yeah, we could go there.
We will. We absolutely will.
We could go there. But I mean, to go out and play a tough course, you know, 4 days in a row, assuming you make the cut, 4 days in a row, and then having a bad break or two go against you. Because like you say, some of it is luck, which it is. You hit it in some of those fairways. Some of them bounce forward. Some of them bounce immediately right. Some land in a divot. Some don't. I mean, it's golf, so that kind of stuff happens. But to know that, you know what, the next hole is not going to be any easier. The next round's not going to be any easier. You just got to kind of go with it. And I think that's what JJ Spahn really showed, that the first like five or six holes, I mean, the one hole he hit the flag stake and then had a 60-yard pitch shot back up the hill.
Yeah.
I mean, let's talk about bad luck. I mean, that's crazy. Right. He started off with what, 4 or 5 bogeys in the front nine.
He wasn't paying attention when Tiger said not to aim at the hole, right?
Yeah, he didn't get it. He just didn't read the memo.
I thought that was interesting, man. I have no problems with it being like that. But to me, that is a version of golf that's intended to be very specific and very isolated to one or two events. I would not enjoy watching the guys play like that each week. I don't think they would enjoy playing like that each week. I think the golf course should just allow them to play to their strengths, and whatever the score is the score. And obviously the easiest way to solve that is to drop the par a little bit. I mean, we had a 290-yard par three at the U.S. Open. Why can't we have a couple longer par threes or a couple?
And those guys were hitting it with no problem.
Right. So, right? I mean, yeah, I don't know, man. I'm more allergic to the idea that low scores shouldn't happen than I am to the idea that golf should be incredibly hard at the most significant tests. Could you? Yeah, I'm pretty good with that.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I'm okay with that. By the way, Scottie Scheffler, this is like the second or third big thing that he said this year, where he's actually a pretty like interesting guy to listen to if you ask him the right question. He doesn't like freely just throw things out, but he's pretty introspective. I actually like listening to his interviews. If you get him on a good topic, he'll give you a solid answer. He's just not going to give it to you like willy-nilly.
Right. Well, I imagine he's the kind of guy that spends a lot of time thinking about his perspective before really unleashing on it. And I would imagine he feels quite strongly about what he said without being too prickly about it. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate it. And it represents him as a person as well. I think he's shown that style of personality is who he is. And we're really fortunate to have him on tour right now because he is probably the biggest story.
Oh yeah, easily. He's definitely the biggest story. And if you watch any of the tournaments he's in, you know, the broadcasters will let you know that he's the biggest story. Scotty's still not out of this.
Yeah.
He's six back with seven to go. He's sir, there.
Sir, he missed the cut yesterday. No, he's got a chance.
He's got a chance.
Well, let's talk tantrums, because absolutely, why not? I suppose you have a pretty strong perspective, but you know, as much as I don't want this to be focused on one player, he's sort of put himself in that position over the last couple of weeks. Wyndham Clark is the guy we're going to be talking about. You're welcome to use other examples, because there are plenty of it out there. And even Ian Poulter admitted to destroying some temporary stuff back in the day, which, I mean, let's be honest, it's Ian Poulter. The fact that anything stood standing after he was gone is pretty surprising.
But the least surprising name ever to come out. Yeah. Like, hey, I've destroyed things.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone knows he is in fact running his socials at this point. But it wasn't, we're not going to start with what he did at the US Open. We're going to start with the club throw a couple weeks prior where he almost struck a volunteer and then put a hole in a sign right behind him, snapped his club, left it there without apology. I want to hear your thought before we get into any of it on that little specific tantrum there.
You know, I feel like there's been a lot more of it, not just with him, like with a lot more club throws and things getting smashed on the course. Like Rory hit a tee marker.
Yeah, I was going to say,
you know what I mean?
Current Masters champions throwing tantrums every day.
We're seeing it more and more. I don't know what the trend is. I mean, you could say, yeah, there's off course stuff. Oh, there's always off course stuff. I mean, there's stuff that we don't understand that goes on in our lives. And, you know, sometimes it gets you to the boiling point, but man, there's been a lot. And that Wyndham Clark, the club throw one, that was dangerous, dude.
Dangerous. And that's where I can't stop thinking about that piece of it, because he certainly didn't look behind him to make sure no one was there.
No,
that club was gone before he was looking at it. There was some feedback from the volunteer who said it was terrifying. There was no apology at the time from him. In fact, he just checked that his club was broken and left everything there. Just like, first and foremost, the safety of the spectators, other than bouncing off their foreheads with drives that are wayward off the tee. Like there has to be a line drawn at some point, right?
Yeah, there has to be. There should be no room for, if you want to be like a John Daly or a Rory and throw your ball into a body of water, or your club into a body of water. All right. Whatever. That's fine.
That's my favorite, honestly.
That actually doesn't bother me at all, because it's not putting anybody else in danger. And, you know, there's nothing. The only bad thing that's going to happen out of that is, you know, you're losing your club. But in like the split second and a half, you've probably analyzed that when you get ready to chuck it in.
Yeah,
so, right. You know, you're going to live with that. That stuff doesn't bother me as much. But throwing a club in an area where there are spectators or volunteers, I have an issue with that. I think that's wrong. I think it's dangerous. And I think they should be penalized for it.
And what do you think an appropriate penalty for something like that would be?
I think eventually,
$1 billion question.
Yeah. You know, obviously there's got to be a fine associated with it. And, you know, if you want to do it like a strike policy, you know, here's your warning. Here's your fine. Here's your other fine. All right. Now you're suspended for a signature event.
Yeah.
You get a week off.
Tough.
There's
break.
Everything seems to be about money these days with the tours. So this is one of your chances where you're going to make big money. Guess what? Because of your actions, you're not able to play for it. Sorry. You're out.
It's really hard, because a lot of these dudes have, like, Rory slams a club and gets a week off. It doesn't really impact him in a way that I want him to be impacted by it.
Right.
You know, that's where I kind of get trapped, and it's no different than anything else. Like, you got to damage him on the scorecard, in my opinion. I don't want golf to get to that point, but I also don't want guys throwing tantrums on the golf course and breaking things or throwing their clubs at people. What else can you do? I personally think a disqualification on the spot is more than viable. Don't kick him off next week. Kick him out of the tournament at that moment.
Yeah. You know, I could see that. It's not, I wouldn't DQ. But I mean, if you want to do a stroke penalty,
you're soft, Dean.
I'm soft. But you know what? All I think of is when you're saying that, my mind, this is how crazy my mind is. I'm thinking back to Mighty Ducks 2 and Kenny Wu getting a penalty on him and being like, 2 minutes, well worth it. Like that would be Rory like up by five and just like throwing his club and be like, here's a two stroke penalty. Two well strokes, worth it. Well worth
yeah.
it.
Let's yeah. Go. Well, I mean, Rory's not Kenny Wu, thank goodness.
He's not Kenny Wu.
I think wasting their time would be more important. I think giving them the next week off, or giving them a signature event off for a guy who's already got tens of millions of dollars in his bank, I don't think hits him in a way that I want to be hit. I think a disqualification will absolutely end this nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, it could. I don't know if it does, though.
Well, if it doesn't, I mean, we sure get to talk more about it.
Well, let's think about it this way. So if you are Friday afternoon and you're obviously not hitting the ball the way you want to, if you're to the point that you want to just start like hurling clubs all over the place and I steal the, you know, so Friday afternoon, I steal a bag from the caddy and I just unload it, just chuck it into the stands and they DQ me. There's a good chance I was going home Friday night anyway.
Well, pace of play improves when you're no longer on the tee sheet. So
yeah. And I don't have to go pick up all those random clubs.
Yeah. You'd be like Spieth and point your caddy at him.
Go get that.
Yeah. Fair play. But also this, this system of escalation, I think I like the idea of warning and then, you know, getting to worse and worse situations. I think there is a solution and the short of it is I think our tour players need to be more accountable for their actions. And the part of that is when Clark left that tournament, he posted on social media what looked like an AI type of response. You know, it's like, what am I sorry for? And they wrote it out. But here's what pissed me off about it. He put it on social, but he only allowed the people he tagged in the post to respond. So obviously no one could respond. I mean, that is the most petty thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, you don't want to read feedback on what you did. You're sorry, but you don't want to hear about it. And then you're welcome to comment on that if you want, but we do need to get into the next part where he went to a tournament not long thereafter and had a tantrum destroying lockers in Oakmont's clubhouse. Not a temporary locker either. This is a part of a course with a long history. It is a very reputable, beautiful golf course. And then he didn't want to talk about it the following week. I'd like to move on. Not really. He's sorry for it, but he wants to move on. Like, what the hell is that?
It's kind of funny. It seems to be the way the world is now. I did that. Let's forget about it. We're moving forward. That's what we're doing. We're just moving forward.
Wouldn't it be nice? So first of all, I have two questions. Number one, if you went and had the privilege of playing Oakmont and got the absolute crap kicked out of you, then went into the clubhouse and beat the hell out of a couple lockers, what do you think they would do to you?
I'd never be invited back.
Do you think that's it?
No, I think there'd be more than that, but I mean, that would be the one that would hurt me.
Sure. Yeah.
Cause I'm sure the million dollar fine would be easy. Chump change.
I was already waiting for the invite for my second round there. Yeah. Oh, I can't go back again. Darn.
Can't go back. Well, I left my mark.
My issue with a lot of that is there is no way Oakmont would treat him or treat me the same way they treated him. They've clearly turned a blind eye to it. Whereas if it was someone who had the privilege to go play, not a tour member, they would probably ban them for life. They would probably force to pay for damages. And very likely, I mean, it's property damage that certainly have good reason to, you know, contact the authorities and do something about it. So the idea that they don't have to face any of those consequences, I would love for them to come out and say, "You're banned, bro. You're never coming back here."
But now you're mad because you just told me you didn't want people suspended from events.
Oh no. I think that would be incredibly embarrassing. There's a US Open there again in like what, 8 years.
Yeah, I think they've got seven of them scheduled in the next like 35 years.
We could talk about that another time. That's gross. On the same freaking courses every year. I get it. I don't know, man. I think the idea that he can just skate by and do that stuff and have quote unquote remorse, but wants to move on. Like, that's a joke, dude.
Yeah, I feel bad, but I want to just move on. Talking about it gets me depressed and more likely to do it again. So let's just go to the next topic.
I mean, it's so soft. Like, do you have any other thoughts on that? Or am I just going to sit here and live in frustration?
you saw the pictures of the damaged lockers. First thing went through my mind, I was like, that's what the lockers look like at Oakmont.
I definitely thought that.
I'm like, oh my God, I expected much better than that. Oh, it's so terrible. I mean, he should be having a pretty good fine, which I'm sure he did. And I'm sure he probably paid gladly. there's got to start being some consequences for that stuff, man. On the course, off the course, it's getting out of control. He's like, seems like he's in a downward spiral, and you hate to say that about somebody, but you're kind of seeing it. You don't like it. And we saw him on Full Swing. You know, he's very open about working with, a psychologist and or a psychiatrist and getting stuff done and getting in a better mental space. It just doesn't seem like it's there right now. It's tough to watch.
Yeah. I think him and Rory are clearly in the same group chat because they seem to be both having some struggles emotionally on the course. And listen, I know we're chilling here in our armchairs, being incredibly judgmental, but in my defense, while I don't play on tour for millions of dollars, I'm also not a millionaire. I pay to play golf and I never act like that. So, as I'm raising a son, as you're raising a child, the idea that we can't look to them to show our kids what a professional means, what it means to act like a professional, is incredibly frustrating. It's certainly a good opportunity to say, hey, probably don't do that stuff, but I expect more, honestly.
Yeah, be a professional. Wear pants and don't throw clubs.
Yes, dude. Pretty I've been simple. Wearing pants to try and tell my kid, like, this is what you have to do here.
There you go.
God, what an adventure. What else you got for me today, buddy?
Oh, I don't know. Do you want to talk about anything else? Can we talk really quick?
Yeah.
I know we're running. Can we talk about how crappy this tour schedule is really quick? We're done with signature events. Okay. We've got the last major is in, what, like 3 weeks, middle of July, and it's just like, oh, cool. Now we just chill. It's terrible.
And then there's what? Ryder Cup and FedEx Cup eventually.
Yeah, FedEx Cup, Labor Day weekend, but nobody cares about that. Ryder Cup, that's a big deal. That's September though. So yeah. We have nothing of like consequence. It bothers me. It bothers me that they moved the PGA from August to May, because I think it really does compact that schedule. And it just seems like it's one major after another, which is fun. But then all of a sudden, you're sitting there middle of July and you're like, for us, right in the middle of golf season, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, cool. There's no major championship golf left to watch.
Let's ask April. The most pointed question in the room then. Why not add the players to be the fifth major and then spread them out?
Tradition.
Yeah. Okay. So what's on tour or the players as the fifth major? What are you taking?
A spread out
major season.
I would rather have a spread out major season.
So we're going shorts. The shortest one, 7-inch inseams for everyone.
No. Give me the spread out majors instead of shorts.
Spread out majors, not shorts.
Not shorts.
Wait, yeah, spread out shorts or not shorts?
Spread shorts.
Okay.
At majors.
Well, what a mess. I'll tell you what, buddy. This season of golf has brought a lot more entertainment to me than I thought it would. I've been pretty down on the tour. But it has to keep hitting. The majors have to keep having interesting stories. The big guys have to show up at some point. I don't need Adam Scott to be my hero on Sunday. That's not what I'm looking for. Listen, I'll be honest with you, dude. I was rooting Sam Burns the whole way. I wanted to see Burnsy win. But yeah, I don't know. Open.
I like the story of the guy who I feel like is owed one from years past. Okay, I was rooting for Adam Scott. Granted, it wasn't the US Open that owes him. It's the Open Championship that is due for him. But
so you're saying Tony Finau is going to win the Open. That's great news.
No,
he'll be strongly secured in that, letdown pick in my major bracket. So
talk about a guy who just like fell off. It's so disappointing.
What a nice guy, though.
He is a nice guy. Good family guy. Entertaining guy. But his putting has just gotten so bad.
Is that what happened to you? Just too nice of a guy? You fell off? Just
much too nice of a guy. Anybody who's met me will know I'm much too nice.
what a fun time. I always love chatting tour golf with you. I appreciate your perspective on it. And I look forward to chatting with you about the Open on the THP forum, because we have crazy major threads over there. So if you're looking for someone to yell at and or argue with or agree with or celebrate with, and your wife doesn't care about golf, we'll be there for you.
That's right. It's well said.
Thanks, buddy. Hey, if you guys are playing golf this weekend, please be safe. It's super hot out. I have golf on my schedule with the family, actually. So we will we'll definitely pay attention, get that SPF a jillion on my body. It's a hot one. If you are playing with a buddy who needs to hear it, tell him he's good at golf. I assure you it'll make his day, but don't do it after a bad shot. I've tried that. It doesn't work very well. We'll see you guys next week. Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Shaft University. I'm Don Brown, Vice President of Engineering at True Temper. Let's get into it. This week's question is about why you don't see more wedge shaft fittings out in the marketplace. It's obviously a very important club, but you don't see a lot of shaft fittings. One of the reasons is there's just not a lot of adjustable wedge heads out there where it's easy to change the shaft in and out. So if you think about all the varieties of wedge lofts, grinds, all the different shafts out there, you'd end up with a huge matrix of product you'd have to build to be able to do that intensive of a wedge fitting. We are starting to see some of these kind of changeable shafts come online, so you'll probably see some more wedge fittings going on in the future. How do you know a wedge shaft to use? A lot of it depends on what you use that wedge for. For me, for example, my 60 degree wedge rarely gets swung at full speed, so I'm just really looking for something stable. So, of course, I go with the GOAT Dynamic Gold S400. If you look at my gap wedge, I swing that at the same speed as I do my irons. I usually only on full swings. It's just part of my set. So in that instance, I'd use the same shaft that I'm using in my set. In this case, that'd be a DG Mid 95 that I use in the rest of my irons. Hope that answers your questions. I definitely feel like you'll see more wedge shaft fittings coming online here in the near future. See you guys next.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.